to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your host, Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer. And with me today, guest hosting, back, coming back to where it all started for you, the podfather of the That's So Cincinnati podcast,
the founding podfather,
Jason Williams. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good to see you. Great. This podcast is going to be about the Bengals. We have a very special guest today, Bengal Jim Foster. Most people don't even know his last name.
I was getting ready to say, I didn't realize that was his last name.
Yeah, he's just Bengal Jim. His Bengal Jim and Friends tailgate.
His last name is Jim.
Yes, his first name is Bengal. Last name is Jim. If you are a Bengals fan of any caliber, you have probably come across Bengal Jim. His Bengal Jim and Friends tailgate has just blown up. We're going to talk with him about how he became Bengal Jim and what it's like being a Bengal fan this season. Not good, as your friend Marty Bredeman would say.
Not good.
How we looking?
How we looking? Not good. But Bengal Jim, through thick and thin, is with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, it'll be interesting.
He was fan of the year too, I think.
He was fan of the year.
That's a really cool program the NFL does.
Yeah,
that's a neat.
I think it was
the Super Bowl year when he got it.
Well, we'll have to see if he'll recall that for us. He hasn't been ruler of the jungle, has he? He should be. If not,
if he hasn't been,
there are
a lot of people that I would have pushed to the side to have him do it before them. But I mean, I don't make those calls. So
the day everybody's mouths will drop open is when Jason Williams becomes ruler of the jungle. But you know what? I wanted to have you do the podcast this week. You know, you are our sports columnist. You call them like you see them.
Yeah.
And this has been a rough season for Bengals fans.
Yeah.
I can't recall when expectations were so high. You know, the team looked great. You know, they made some major moves in the draft and then brought in a new defensive coordinator. This could have been the year, but man, it just fell apart early, starting with turf toe.
Yeah.
The defense actually performing worse than last year.
Yeah.
You follow this team day in and day out. What's it been like as a sports columnist helping the fans process all of this?
Well, it's hard. I found the challenge of this season. It's hard not to get caught up from my job in Twitter, and that everybody wants everybody fired. And I've thought a lot about this, and that's the natural inclination is that fire Zach, fire Duke, fire, you know, cut all the players. And to me, like, if you're going to call for someone in my role or, you know, your role, our role as in the Cincinnati Enquirer, what we call the legacy media, the media that's covering a team credentialed on the daily basis. I feel like, yeah, that's a serious thing if you're calling for someone. And I know we're living in the world of entertainment and sports, and people get fired. You know, here today, gone tomorrow. You perform this year, you don't. Next year, you're gone. You know, we see, you know, and it's there's just, it seems like more and more we go along, coaches get fired more quickly nowadays. But I just feel like you can't take that lightly in our role. So, like, people have been asking me a lot about, like, well, why don't you call for the firing of you know, the coach? And
you actually kind of did the unexpected for at least Jason Williams.
Yeah.
Talk about the column you wrote and the response you got about that. The problem is not Zach Taylor.
Yeah. Well, I think there's more to it than, right. And that's kind of, yeah, thank you for asking me. As I was getting to that, like, the problem with the team, and this is, you got to cut through a lot of the noise. You got to cut through and really get to the nitty gritty of what's really wrong here. And, you know, there's a lot been said and written about it and talked about. It's the play. it's the players that they've their defensive players in general. There's a couple of good players, but they just haven't drafted well enough. And that's the bottom line here. They haven't drafted well enough. They haven't spent money on free agents. They made the decision they made the decision really after the AFC Championship game in the 2022 season that they were going to go and spend more money on offense. That was when obviously Burrow he was coming up on his first contract. Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, then that's when they went and spent money on the offensive line. And so they made the decision as an organization to spend really most of their resources on the offensive side. So when you do that, you then are going to build your defense through the draft. They let Jesse Bates go. That was really the pivotal moment, letting him go. He was the quarterback of the defense, mm-hmm. a veteran, the kind of leader that you want. The kind of take charge guy who's going to, if things are out of line or guys are getting a little like a coach on the field, really. And that was a really, really pivotal moment. I was just talking to one of our other editors about just how critical him not being re-signed was for what's happening right now. And so when you look at that moment and then they make the decision to go all in on the draft, and they've just not gotten it done. And so how is that Zach Taylor? How is that Zach Taylor's fault? Well, certainly, obviously, he's the day-to-day on-the-field guy, but they've changed out now defensive coordinators, and it's still the same results and really even worse. That's not on Al Golden. He's an excellent coach. Lou Anarumo is an excellent defensive coach. And so,
right. I feel like Anarumo was, somebody's head had to roll.
Yeah.
So
he was a scapegoat.
Yeah.
Totally.
So he took one. He was a sacrificial lamb. But I think.
But culture wise, Zach Taylor.
Well, talk about that a little bit. Yeah.
And so there's so much more to it here when you look at what I just talked about. But then you've got a very challenging job in that a front office has basically set up a Super Bowl caliber offense for you, and a really what's most of the players on defense here would be backups for most teams, second and third stringers. And so that is quite a divide. Now that's now Zach Taylor's job. And we saw, it's after what the Bears lost, that brutal loss to them. Chase Brown pops off to the media. Those are indications of what I'm just talking about, that great divide of we're at the top of our game here on this side of the locker room, and that side of the locker room
seems to be a lot of tension.
Yes.
And that's never good.
And so Zach, though, has built, and I know it can sound a little rah-rah, but Zach is...
I've never heard anyone accusing you of being rah-rah.
No. I respect Zach from the culture piece. I think that he has the command of the players and that the locker room, and he's kept that locker room together through a really difficult, challenging season. Even the way he's handled, like the Chase Brown and now the Jamar Chase spitting, he's like, hey, I don't want one moment in the heat of the moment and losing his cool to define who this guy is overall as a player and a leader in the locker room. So the way that he respects the players, the way that he has their backs, I talked to Orlando, I talked to handful of players for that column, and Orlando Brown, I used his quotes. Like he was, he said, I didn't even ask him, and he starts rattling off all these coaches he's played for, like Hall of Fame coaches, and then he's like, I'd kill for Zach Taylor, and he's like, he's an amazing man. Just talked about the culture piece, and that really stood out to me. There's so much more to this than, just looking at what the record is in terms of how it relates to Zach Taylor's leadership and his role in coaching this team. So I just felt, I felt like there was something there to write. I felt like, I'd requested Duke Tobin to talk about the drafting and what's happened on the field. The Bengals haven't responded to that, in terms of making him available. So I'm like, I don't know. I just got that idea, and I felt like, and it was got great response to it. A lot of great emails, a lot of great reader emails from it, and something different.
Something different.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm like.
No, I mean, and for me, I take a lot of, I get a lot of feedback from readers.
Yes.
And you are very polarizing. Either people love you or hate you. And I think that just comes with the territory of a good sports columnist. If you're down the middle, you're squishy and no one cares. So you are provocative in a responsible way. But you're not always negative. Sometimes it's, you zig when people are zagging. And you did that this time because I think that's the easy target. Go after the head coach, right? Yeah. And it's understandable because fans are so frustrated, Maybe they're mad that, Jamar decided he needed to spit and then say, what? I didn't spit despite the fact, I don't know, there's, seven camera angles showing he clearly spit. But no one's going to say, get rid of Jamar Chase, right? No one's going to say, it's time for a new quarterback, right? So the fans' anger has to be targeted somewhere. And what I hear most is, the same old, it's the ownership. They're not spending enough money.
Yeah.
Or it's time for a new coach. And I'm with you. It seems like a long time ago, but it wasn't that long ago that he was popping up in local bars, throwing game balls out to fans, celebrating wins and the first AFC championship in quite a few years. So do you think that that's part of it too, that we're still clinging to the hope that we had
big time, and the fact that many of the key players who took this team on that ride to the Super Bowl and then back to nearly to the Super Bowl again are still here. And obviously Zach Taylor was the coach. And I'm glad you brought that up about Zach Taylor and going to the bars, because very, very, very few coaches, NFL or college, would do that. And the way, and that's very uncharacteristic of the Bengals organization to really connect with the community on that kind of a really intimate level. For him to go out and get, that was a cool thing. We wrote a ton about it. Mm-hmm. I think we had our photo folks were out there, and that was special, because that's the kind of connection that you just don't see very often. And I mean, now you got to wonder, are we ever going to see that again here?
I know.
At least anytime soon.
And we still have PTSD from the 90s, right?
Right. And a lot of memories of that are coming up now with the way they're performing.
Right. Well, obviously, there's not a lot of hope left in this season. The last question I will ask you before we bring on Bengal Jim is, will we see Joe Burrow take a snap this season?
Oh, goodness.
The million, or how much is he paid? The $30 million question. Yeah.
I wrote a column about this the day he came back to practice. And I touched on, I think there's a power struggle coming down the pike here, because he wants to play no matter what. He's practicing as if he's going to play. And yet, as we sit here and record this, they're 3-7 with the New England Patriots coming to town, who are number one or number two record in the AFC. And I would love to be a fly on the wall in those meetings of maybe the meetings between Zach and the front office, and then the meetings with Zach and the coaches and Joe, Because I think there's probably a lot of internal hand-wringing going on over this.
I think you're right, and I think the power dynamic is what I'm watching. So here's my take, and you tell me if I'm I'm on or off. Joe wants to play.
No matter what.
Does not care.
It could be one win on the season.
Right, exactly. And probably Zach Taylor, ownership, if they know that this is not their year to go deep in the playoffs, why would you risk another injury, another setback, let him heal up and come back super strong next season? I think that's obviously the question. And if Joe Burrow takes a snap, we're going to know who runs. We're going to know that he's the tail wagging the dog, right?
Boom.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
Great, great. Great assessment there, because that's spot on. That's my thoughts, too.
For a casual observer of the NFL, that wasn't too bad. That means a lot to me, Jason. Thank you.
I think you captured that very nicely.
Well, we'll see if the dog wags the tail or vice versa. Jason, thanks for getting us ready for our special guest. We are going to now bring on the one, the only, Bengal Jim. Special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. As promised, we have the most celebrated, well-known Bengals fan in all of Bengaldom. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Bengal Jim, a.k.a. Jim Foster.
A little too much there, but I appreciate the intro.
Welcome to the podcast. So, this is your season, man. This is your time to shine.
It's a wonderful time in Cincinnati. Friday night high school, Saturday college, Sunday NFL, our Bengals. It's my favorite time of the year.
Well, as I've said on this podcast many times, I love a good origin story. Those were my favorite comic books, like the origin of Spider-Man or the origin of Doctor Strange. How did you become Bengal Jim?
This isn't some exciting story.
Well, let's make it exciting.
Yeah, let's try to make it exciting. Up, yeah. So, like, literally, I remember being in middle school, and when I was about 10 years old, it was the first time I ever watched the Bengals play, and I was hooked. I'd love football, and I would always wear Bengal shirts and something to school, and my buddies used to always just call me Bengal Jim. And
so it started
in middle school.
In middle school.
And like, literally,
see, this is already a good origin story.
See? It's like, literally, it has just stuck. I don't call myself Bengal. I'm not one of those guys, although it doesn't look like that perception-wise, but literally, my friends have been calling me Bengal Jim since my seventh grade year in middle school.
So that's where you got the name.
Mm-hmm.
But now you are, you know, whenever there's a game, if you want to be where the where the fans are having the most excitement and the most fun, they usually gravitate around you. How did that start? The tailgates,
This is an uncomfortable story for me because, again, understand what we're doing today. This is a group of us that make this happen. It's a team effort, without a doubt. But origin story for you, how the tailgate started was a pretty simple one. In 1993, that opening day, in 1993, the old Synergy Field, or Riverfront at the time, I can't remember which when they changed the name. I think it was Riverfront at the time. Me and three of my buddies just got a old charcoal grill and some hot dogs and burgers and a cooler of beer and sit down in the parking lot and tailgated and just, I don't know what it was. We'd never done it before. It was my first experience ever tailgating anywhere. And it was just the atmosphere down in the parking lot, which is fun. And families coming together, friends, people they only see once a week, they're coming down there to their tailgates. And I experienced that first time tailgating, and we've been doing it ever since. Now, it's come a long way in a 30 plus year period, but it's pretty amazing. It's been a lot of fun. So we can dig. That's the origin of the Bengal Jim and Friends tailgate right there. Three of my buddies getting together for a tailgate pregame.
So it's a little more structured than that now.
Significantly. I would tell you right now, it's a production. We're in Lot E, the east side of Lot E that butts up against Smail Park right on the river, not even right the south end zone of the stadium right there. We'll have anywhere between 2,500 to 5,000 fans show up.
Let's pause on that a minute. You're a very humble guy. Oh, it's not a big deal. You started in 1993 with you and a few buddies and a cooler of beer. Now, 2,500 to 3,000 people?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. So it's gotten so big to the point where we do have to meet with the Bengals because we've gotten so big, we're taking up more of the parking lot, which they need for parking.
Sure.
So what we do now is that for the past 3 or 4 years, we rent out half a Smale Park. So we pay a rental fee to expand into the park area. So literally we have a lot of Cincinnati favorites like Skyline Chili. Steve Missler and his family brings their Skyline Chili truck down to the tailgate. Everything Bagels comes down. Donato's Pizza sets up. We have David Fulcher, Icky Woods set up their foundations there. Bengal Bids. Local brewery, a High Grain Brewery, is part of this. I'm missing somebody, I'm sure. Oh, yeah, Cincy Hats sets up down there as well. So this is there's nothing better than on a game day, pregame, hanging with people from all over the world. And we'll get into that in a little bit as well. But it's unbelievable. It's just a lot of fun, family-friendly atmosphere. The kids and the families that come will get to the park early and find some picnic tables, and the people that are more partiers will hang over closer to the bar area. But it's just a fun atmosphere, and it's great for the city.
Now, how do you attend? What's how does that work?
It's free. It costs us significant dollars to do this. We ask for donations is what we ask for. So we'll have buckets, QR codes, things yep. of that nature. But that's it. We've got five guys in our inner circle that are on our board. We're a 501c3. We'll get into some of the charity discussion here in a little bit, I'm sure. But
yeah, for sure.
Those guys are the one to drive it. We drive this whole thing. And there's a lot of people that help beyond that as well.
So let's touch on, you mentioned Icky Woods, David Fulcher. We've had Fulcher on the podcast.
Yeah, he's a
podcast for Full Rock. That had to be a little bit of a, how did this happen? How did I get here to, you know, being like many kids growing up in Cincinnati, watching the Bengals, being a Bengals fan. And now you are, you know, working with the Bengals on this, the organization on this tailgate. You have former players that are plugged into it as well. Did you wake up one day and just say, how did this happen? How did I get here?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, just kind of go back a little bit. We don't work with the Bengals on this. We have to get things approved because it has gotten so big, right?
Right,
we just want
yeah.
to make sure we're not stepping on anybody's toes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's you know, growing up in the 80s, I'm an 80s kid. And that was my prime football watching career, watching the David Fulchers and the Icky Woods of the world, Ken Anderson, Ken Riley, all those guys. And most of these guys come to the tailgate. You know, Ken Anderson comes every year, first game of the year, does our toast, and we that's his specific charity, KAA, that we work with, mm-hmm. That opening
Ken
day.
Ken Anderson Alliance.
Yeah, Ken Anderson Alliance. Mm-hmm. And then every game we have former players, current players' families, that type of, but it, you know, kind of stepping back and looking at this, you know, Ken Anderson was my favorite player when I was a little kid. David Fulcher and Icky Woods. I'm like, and now these guys are just like you and I. They're just.
Oh yeah, they're
great,
you know,
dudes.
I've seen. They walk up and they're like, "Hey Jim," and you're just like, "Oh hey Ken," like it's no big deal.
I don't fanboy that much, but it is absolutely awesome that when I sit back and look at what this tailgate has become and what it has built and what it's done for our community to be able to hang with. Basically, my childhood heroes has just been a lot of fun.
No, it's a cool story. Let's get into the charity a little bit. When did that become part of it? And I think a lot of people that are casually know about the tailgate, you can't miss it. I haven't attended it per se, but if you're down here on a game day and you're walking around, you can't miss it. You know, especially like you said, you're into the park now. Talk a little bit about how it also became a way that you guys give back to the community.
Yeah, I'll tell you, probably 2013-14, I became really close friends with my buddy James Coppola and Craig Johnson, both local business owners as well. And, you know, we started branding this thing. I remember them telling me to turn sideways my bucket hat during a preseason game, took a picture on next preseason game, there was this big banner said, "Welcome to Bengal Gyms." I'm like, guys, with my silhouette, I'm like, guys, I don't want my name on this tailgate. We got to change the name. They're like, nope, we're going to brand it. We're going to market it. This is what we're going to do. We've been doing charity stuff since then, but I would tell you, we didn't keep real good track of it at that point in time. We were working with us charity or two throughout the year, but in 2020 is when we really, really started to step it up because during COVID, a lot of these foundations, I sit on a board of a couple foundations here locally, these foundations couldn't raise money. They couldn't get together during COVID. That was their main way to raise money. So we did what we could during COVID to really step our game up to help out a lot of these local foundations. So that's when it really started getting big. You know, we got other folks like Tony the Tiger and his wife Carrie and our entire group that has a lot of good relationships with these foundations and local businesses that help out with this. So the charity stuff has been amazing. You know, last year we raised $169,000 for local charities. This year we're already at $102,000. It is unbelievable. It's not a tailgate, just a bunch of guys sitting in their lounge chairs. It's guys working their butts off to bring people together and raise money for these foundations. Every game that we have, a home game, we identify a charity for that game, and the charity brings their people down. They'll sell raffles at the tailgate for, we'll give away a helmet or a jersey or something, but we'll raise anywhere between $2,000 to $4,000 a game for these charities. So, but 2020 is we really started stepping it up significantly because we knew these charities needed our help.
Well, that's great. Who are a few of the charities that you are devoting the tailgate to this year?
So I think we're up to like 30 foundations, but I tell you, each one in our group, each one of us individually have something that's and means something to us. My buddy James was real big on the Alzheimer's Association. Every year we raise about 10 to 15 grand for them. I'm real big at Ken Anderson Alliance. I have four boys. One of my kids is on the autistic spectrum, which that's why KAA is important to me.
And for listeners who don't know or don't remember, Ken Anderson Alliance is Ken Anderson, former Bengals quarterback, his nonprofit to help adults with any kind of
any disability
live independently or find
That's
housing.
Right.
It's just a support.
That's
for
right. Yeah, my wife and I are not going to be here forever.
Right.
I got a 29-year-old that lives with us. I mean, he's functional. He drives back and forth to work, but we've got to figure out a path and a plan for him to move forward to leave independently when we're not here someday.
Right.
So, and then, you know, Maddie's house is important to Tony and his family. And we got a lot of them here. Craig, we work with different foundations, but there's some that might be a little bit more important to us individually than others.
So it's not just about the beer and the brats.
That's right. That's right.
The tailgate. What else do we need to know about the tailgate before we get into some, you know, I introduce you as one of the most, well-known fans, and I know you're a huge Bengal fan, and we'll talk about that a little bit too. But what else do we need to know about the tailgate?
Tailgates, you know, people say, hey, I'm going to go to the tailgate. Well, they've never been there. It's more of a block party than it is a tailgate, and it's family friendly. There's, you know, kids are down there, and I would say it's not just home games, though. We do take it on the road for several games. We were doing three this year. We did Minnesota. We did Green Bay, a massive tailgate in Green Bay. We had a little over 1,000 people at the tailgate in Green Bay, two blocks from the stadium. But we're going to Miami, and this Miami tailgate might be the most unique one we've ever done. It's sold out. We only had limited tickets. We paid a big amount of money to rent out right next to Miami's football stadium as a Formula One racetrack. And we're going to be tailgating on pit row in Formula One garages, 20 yards from the front gate of the stadium. We're going to have some former players down there. Folger will be with us. We think Justice Smith will be there. The Miami Dolphins cheerleaders will be with us. But it's not just home games. It's away games. And we've had some massive away games in Charlotte. We had 1,500 people at the tailgate. We rented out an entire lot. It's crazy.
You know, back in the day, Bengals fans were criticized for not being the best travelers. Do you think you're part of the reason that has changed?
No, I would tell you that's a misconception. The national narrative is, you know, you've got all these fans from Green Bay and Pittsburgh that travel. They do. They do well. I'm telling you, it's been like this for a long time. It has come to a head when Burrow got here, right?
Right.
We're going to away games now, and it's gotten bigger, to your point. But I don't think we had anything to do with it. It just, when Burrow got here and people see other people travel, and you know, you can do it sometimes inexpensively, right? Share rooms and
sure.
split costs. But you know, I'll never forget Kansas City game, the AFC Championship game. I'll never forget Green Bay this year. We had dozens of Green Bay fans coming up to us saying, I've never seen this many opposing fans in one area at one time. We get that comment a lot. But Bengal fans do travel well. And understand, for clarity, it's not just people here in our tri-state area that follow this team. We have a massive following across the country and even a bigger following internationally. At the tailgate, home tailgates, we have this giant map of the entire world where there's pins. And when you come in from out of town, you take a pin and put it in for where you're out of town from. Since 2019, all 50 states are represented, hundreds of cities are represented, and 32 different countries are represented. Massive amounts of fans in Canada, Toronto, England is amazing. Paul and his fan group over there are just unbelievable. Germany, South America, it is Mexico City. We have massive amount of Bengal fans in these areas, and they come in town all the time. And again, that's not just good for fans interacting with other fans, fans from all across the world, but that impact to the city, I can't quantify at all because they're staying in town, not just for a day or two, they're in town all week, but it's thousands and thousands of people come in from out of town every game to attend and watch our Cincinnati
Bengals.
Where do
you think the international fan base comes from?
It's so funny. It's anytime you run into a fan from out of the country, the first thing is ask, like, how in the heck did you become a Bengals fan? And the stories range from all over the place. Like, the first NFL game I ever watched was the Bengals, and I fell in love with their striped helmets.
Yeah.
The first NFL game I ever watched was the Bengals Super Bowl. Or my favorite player was Chad Johnson. It's just, it goes, that's pretty much the theme. And it's internationally, they, you know, whatever they're starting, they became Bengal fans and have stayed Bengal fans. And that's basically how simple it has been, these people, these comments.
The uniforms, I think, that's not something to just dismiss. We typically will run rankings as far as, you know, which uniforms, which jersey numbers do well. And for some reason, those stripes, if you don't even need to live in Cincinnati, but you just like the look, you know.
That's right. That
it's
helmet.
A nice fit.
That's one of the most iconic NFL helmets and uniforms ever. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Now, you are sporting a white Bengals hat with black type, so you must also like the white out. The white tiger ensemble as well.
I tell
well.
You what, since Elizabeth has kind of come into the front office, the fan experience has gone to another level.
Elizabeth Blackburn.
Yeah, Elizabeth Blackburn, mm-hmm. Sorry. The first stripe, you know, the chance they took, you know they were sitting in that front office saying, man, what if we do this? Totally bombs, right? And that first time they did the stripe the jungle, yeah. It was amazing. Night game, it was amazing. The whiteout is amazing.
I think they are doing a much better job connecting with fans. We've talked about that before, you know, the Ring of Honor, the
amazing.
White. You know, the new uniforms. Although I was worried the first time they did the, the black stripes, all white uniform, I thought, what if they get blown out? They will never wear these uniforms again. It'll be just like bad juju on these. But
right.
I think they won that game, actually. Yeah. I can't remember now. But at least they have maintained the... Because I think it's sharp. I think
I mean to trust the fan base to do this. You see colleges do that. You know, basketball games and a football. They're leaving shirts on the chairs for people. We didn't do that. The fans are the one who stepped up to do that.
So I know you clarified that you don't actually work with the Bengals. You get permission from them. Hearing all of this, I can't believe you're not on the payroll. Because, I mean, I can't think of any bigger Bengals ambassador than you that I know of.
Yeah, yeah, I'll tell you what, I get accused of being on the payroll on social media at times. I'm not on the payroll. Wish I was.
Let's start the campaign right here.
For me, it's this simple, and people can believe it or not. I'm a born and raised Cincinnatian. It's about my city, my team, period. Good or bad, no matter what's going on. Right now is not a good stretch for us, but I'm going to represent and I want to showcase our city. When the Bears came in town, I had 22 people that I showed around the city Saturday. We went to probably 7 different places in OTR, and they had the best time of their life.
That's
but I'm
great.
Proud. I'm proud of our city, man. We got so many great things here in Northern Kentucky and in Cincinnati. It's a hidden gem of this entire country, but I love showing off our city, and I love our Cincinnati Bengals.
So back to the Miami tailgate. You said it's sold out.
Yeah.
All right.
Sold out.
So if you're going to the Miami game and you're not hooked up with this tailgate, you're SOL, right?
Yeah, keep an eye. There might be some people that kind of give up tickets. We can put them back out there. But it's one of those things where this isn't like a home tailgate. We just show up. We have a space. We had to pay. We had to rent this
now,
area.
Do you have all of this information on a website?
Yeah. It's not on a website. It's on our social media platforms.
Okay.
Bengal Gym and Friends on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
All right. We'll link
X,
up
sorry.
To all of that. All right. Moving away from the tailgate and just, tapping into the psyche of one of the biggest Bengals fans in town. How are you doing this season? Are you keeping your spirits up?
I'm in counseling right now. But it's you know, what's really tough about this is the expectations going into the year were as high as they've ever been. You know, a healthy Joe Burrow coming into this season, a new defensive coordinator, some new additions, the extension contracts for Chase and T and everybody else. So and Hendrickson. So we were pretty damn excited going into the year. It has really been awful.
So what do you do to keep positive?
Well, right now the fan base, there's a lot of bickering back and forth. Look, every one of the fans want the same thing. They want this team to win a Super Bowl. We want a Super Bowl parade down here in downtown Cincinnati, right? But how people deal with that is completely different. There's some text strings I'm on with friends. I just can't look at them. I already
know. Negative.
And it's okay. I mean, I understand. Like, our defense stinks. We can't make tackles. We can't get pressure on the quarterback. It's been awful. But yeah, I know what's going on. I don't need to hear it all the time, every day. I know we're not good right now. So it's been tough. I mean, I'm not the person that's going to go out there and complain and just yell about it. I'm the person kind of internalizes it. I'm looking for the silver linings at this point. And it's been rough. It's been a really rough year for every fan, no matter how they're approaching us.
Well, let's talk about happier times. What was it like? you mentioned earlier the AFC Championship game mm-hmm. against Kansas City. We still have hanging on the wall in this studio a framed Enquirer page one with the words, "It is us," written bigger than I think the type size we use when we go to war.
Goosebumps.
Yeah, goosebumps. We won't talk about the how the game ended up, but talk about that season. That had to be tied to also the tailgate and just your connection to the growing, not the growing fan base, but the energized fans base. What was that season like for Bengal Jim?
It was one of the most special years for me. I get a little choked up when I talk about this. It's crazy. What I remember most about that year is the Bengals won their first playoff game in 30-something years, right?
Yeah.
Against the Raiders here at the stadium. I had three of my four boys with me. They'd never seen the Bengals win a playoff game.
Yeah.
I was in a stadium with these guys, and we didn't talk for 5 minutes. We cried.
and folks, we don't have video rolling, but Bengal Jim is choked up right now. I feel like Barbara Walters, you know. Jeez. She was able to make her guest shed a tear here and there. Now all these Gen Z people listening are looking at Barbara Walters.
Yeah, but that memory.
No, I'm with you, man.
That memory was amazing.
I'm with you. I had a couple moments like that too. You know, Joe Burrow. That season would light up a cigar at the, you know, and so I was with some buddies you know, just sharing that moment with your friends, especially through, you know, right. We've all been as Bengals fans through the highs and lows, but a stretch of lows that, you know.
If you were a Bengals fan in the 90s and you were around during 21, the 21 run, it makes it all that much more special. Man, it was from the start of that season till the end, and that's the year that I got named fan of the year, and that was like early mid-October. In my mind, I was like, I thought we were another year or two away from being extremely competitive, right? So I never forget when they did that filming of the fan of the year, which I was totally taken aback and surprised by that. I remember sitting up there thinking, I told my family that I would never go to a Super Bowl unless the Bengals were there. Now I'm getting this Super Bowl trip named in early October. I'm like, man, what do I do if the Bengals don't go to the Super Bowl? Do I do this thing or not? But it was a special run from the start to finish. And the fans and people that I met all across the world and the country, it was an amazing, amazing year. I went to city, and again, I love Cincinnati sports. I love the Reds. I go to 20 Reds games a year. I love the Bengals. But, man, I don't think there's anything in this city that brings this city and this community together than when the Bengals are winning and playing well. I mean, look back to the 21 season, 22 season, back-to-back AFC championships, one Super Bowl. This community was on fire, and no matter where I went, I travel a lot for business, I travel a lot for tailgates. No matter where I go, I'm wearing something Bengals, whether it's what you see on me today or full-blown black and orange everything, head to toe. And not a town I go out of town of, and people don't stop me and talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. Either they talk about the city, they talk about the Bengals. I'm proud of that, but man, that city, that 2021 season was extra special for every fan of this organization.
What was it like for you in the I almost said weeks long, but it was actually like year long back and forth to land the new lease agreement, and the you know, everybody wondering, is this going to be when, you know, the year we lose the Cincinnati Bengals?
You're talking about the most recent situation, yes, right? Yep. Because back in the mid-90s, I also worked on that Issue 1 campaign for the Reds and Bengals stadiums as well. A lot of stuff I can't get into on air right now, but the behind-the-scenes political stuff that I saw, and it just it really frustrated the hell out of me. I'm glad most Cincinnatians don't get to see all that stuff. So it just it feels good to put that stuff to bed at the end of the day.
Were you happy with the just a quick summary? 10-year lease, they figured out the funding. Everybody had to give something up a little bit. At one point, there was some pretty cool plans for new offices, practice facilities, new kind of like entryway, you know, stuff around the stadium. Yeah. Now this is really focused on, you know, the actual stadium improvements itself. 10 years seems like a long time, but it'll be here before you know it. What were you hoping for, a longer lease?
That's kind of the middle of the road.
Yeah.
That because it could have been, hey, we're just going to renew for 2 more years,
right?
Type thing, right?
Extend the current lease.
Extend the current lease, and they had that opportunity to do so. I'll tell you, it was frustrating. I'm glad it got done because, like you said, there was absolutely give and take on both sides. At the end of the day, what the Bengals would say publicly is that they just wanted to maintain the stadium. At the end of the day, they need to maintain it. It's a good stadium. I go all over the country. I've been to every NFL city. This stadium is not one of the bottom half of the stadiums in the NFL for sure. So that 10-year, I was happy with it at the end of the day.
Okay.
There was a lot of political jockeying on both sides, and the county, and it's just, thank God I'm not a politician. I wouldn't make it very long if I was a politician, but at the end of the day, it got done. And I think we're happy for that for sure.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a lifelong Cincinnatian. Are you an East Sider or a West Sider?
See, I don't like that question, but well, I'm going to answer it.
I ask the tough questions. That's
tough
my
question.
Job. Yeah.
So I am a born and raised West Side Cincinnatian at the end of the day, but I'm never home. I'm always downtown.
Yeah.
I can't get my wife to move down here right now. Maybe at some point down the road. But I spend more time away from home than I do at home. I'm always downtown. Covington is an awesome area to us. We're all over the place. But born and raised West Sider. You know, most of my friends and customers that I work with that have become friends are more East Side, Westchester. They're all over the place. But I do love the East Side, West Side banter because I got buddies that live in Eastgate and live in Batavia. See, I live on the East Side. Like, they're trying to look down on me kind of jokingly.
Right.
Like, dude, you're so far east at that point, you're west again. You know, you get, you get past Indian Hill and those Anderson and all those areas. You're West Side again. I just mess with them. But no, that's a fun Cincinnati thing for sure because that's not typical outside of Cincinnati.
And you know, I have this 12-year gap in my Cincinnati life experience where I worked in different markets. I was in D.C. and stumbled into the official Bengals bar in Washington, D.C. Didn't even know such a thing existed. I was there for another reason. I was like, it was a Sunday, and they pulled out all the banners and the flags, and they had like a inflatable giant, you know, Bengal player. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And honestly, I hadn't stumbled across other team bars. I'm sure they exist. Like if you're a Green Bay fan, I'm sure there's a place to go. But anyway, I digress. Growing up here, like you, it seemed to be a more pronounced thing and a more like centralized thing too. Like, you know, we hadn't seen the growth in places like Mason and Westchester and the Northeast and West and all of that stuff. So, and the difference between East and West, I think, are less now because there's been reinvestment on the West Side. There's some bougie places on the West Side.
There is. It's funny. If you've ever been up to Price Hill, you know, what's the area that overlooks restaurant on top? Public Incline House,
yes,
I think is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
There's some great areas up there. So it's funny, like we live in Montford Heights, White Oak, right off 74, like literally right off the 74 exit. It takes me 15 minutes to get downtown. Takes me 20 minutes to get to Kenwood Mall. But my wife's family lives in Delhi, which is West Side.
Yeah.
takes us 20 minutes to get to her mom and dad's house. There's no easy way to get there, right?
We've talked about this before.
That's funny.
But yes, I mean, you know, and also, you know, West Side, very blue collar, East Side, you know, more white collar and professionals versus like tradesmen and stuff like that. That is sort of homogenized East and West. We still talk about it, but if you were to come in from the outside, it would all look the same to you. But now I know, like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that delineation was more pronounced. But I think it's fun we still talk about
that. We do. And the same with that river, Northern Kentucky
and
Cincinnati.
Pride.
Yeah, exactly.
And
we have fun with that conversation, that's East good. And West Side of Cincinnati.
All right. Well, what's next for Bengal Gym? Anything cooking?
You know, we've got a big tailgate plan this week. Really, we're focusing on a lot of our effort and energy in that Miami tailgate. Our guy at Cincinnati Music Accelerator, Kick Lee, is driving down with a big trailer full of our DJ equipment, the stage, the sound equipment, the whole nine yards. So we're focusing a lot of time and energy
on
that.
This almost sounds like it's a full-time job.
It is. It is, pretty much.
But you have a day job.
We do. So remember, there's five of us on our board that kind of work and drive a lot of this. But
right.
But man, oh man, it's been a lot. When you can do what we're doing with this tailgate to help others, we never thought 30 plus years ago this would ever be like this. I mean, you couldn't even imagine it. But to see some of the responses we get from these foundations that we're helping, it's just unbelievable. So this tailgate has become something very special. And there's a lot of great tailgates in this city. And I think it's one of the top five tailgating cities in the country. And they can say all they want, the national narratives about it's Pittsburgh. We tailgate way better than Pittsburgh. I got a lot of buddies in Pittsburgh that say the same thing. Green Bay, it's great, great, great fans up there. But there's nobody that's any better than Cincinnati with tailgating.
Well, on that note, Bengal Gym Foster, thank you for coming on the podcast. Wish you luck. I hope that if people just thought this was a big party, they now know, you know, that it is a, you guys benefit the community in more ways than people realize. So thank you for all you do. I do think you should be on the Bengals payroll. I think we're going to launch an editorial campaign.
Put my resume in.
Exactly. All right. Well, Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for letting me be here. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, once again, we thank Bengal Gym for, he's a busy, busy guy. So we thank him for popping into the podcast today. Learned a little bit about his experience as a fan, his game day experience. Jason, what is your game day experience? You're actually working on game days, so you really can't go tailgate, you know, go get your party on. How do you prepare for game day?
I mean, I'm constantly preparing this throughout the week, obviously just reading everything I can of all the content and writing my own columns about it as well. And so, you know, you walk in, you know, really well prepared or researched in that way. And then,
do you have a few? I know you write based on what happened on the field, what happened on that Sunday. But do you have some pre ideas, just so you're not looking at a blank screen when the game is over?
I have. It used to be really, really, really hard. Writing's hard for me. I always joke with this with one of our old investigative reporter, Mark Word. I was like, writing is hard for me. It's never gotten easier, ever. And goodness gracious, I started my career in 98, like full time. But I've gotten to a point now where I can pre-write some things, like based on, you know, the storylines going in. So I'll try to write some things as if they're going to win, and then some things as if they're going to lose. And sometimes neither one of them, obviously they're going to win or lose.
Sometimes something emerges from the game.
And sometimes none of that stuff ever gets, I never sees the light of day.
Yeah.
So then then usually I'll watch the first half, and then right after halftime, I'll start to then draft more.
Mm-hmm.
And what's crazy is the last two home games, the Jets, the Bears, those coming down, really the last three, right? The Pittsburgh game too. All three of those games coming down to the wire just throws everything into a tizzy. And I've always said this, like, like I've admired my predecessor, Paul Daugherty, who had the incredible talent to write fast.
Yes.
I mean, and that was always, like, I'd known him for years.
Stunningly fast.
Stunningly, as if, I mean, I'm not kidding, folks. Like, some of the columns that you read from him were written in 15 minutes. Like, that is the kind, that is a talent that it's hard for me to comprehend. And there's no mistakes. Like, there's no typos. Or maybe if there's one.
Oh, he's clean. Right. You know, one of my first, when I first joined the Enquirer in the late 90s, and I was on the night news desk, there were occasions where I was the one waiting for the column to give it a last read or whatever. Interestingly enough, by the time I had read it, he had already called saying, was it okay? Did it look good? You know, he was like fast. I couldn't believe how clean his copy was and how fast he could do it. He was, I mean this in the most kindest way possible. He's a freak of nature in that regard.
Big time. Yeah. Do you have time for a quick story?
Yeah, absolutely.
Along those lines, this is a funny, my old friend Bill Cook, who used to be our Bearcats beat reporter, retired a handful of years ago. Still, obviously, he's writing books. And I met Bill first when he was the UC beat reporter and then the sports columnist at Cincinnati Post, and it was my second job. And he told this story about Doc. They were at the 1992 Final Four when UC went to the Final Four, and it was in Minneapolis. I don't know if Doc was over. He was over at the Post. Then he came to the Enquirer. So he was the Post sports columnist. And I don't know at that time if he was either, but they were buds or whatever. Bill had gotten all of his fodder for stories. He had just gotten back upstairs to his hotel room. He literally said he sat down, put his laptop on the desk. The phone rings. Back then it was the hotel phone. Mm-hmm. It's Doc. He's like, Bill, it's Doc. Let's go to dinner. I'm done. Let's go to dinner.
Doc was done.
And Bill's like, I've got three stories to write, and I haven't even turned my laptop on.
Yep. That's the story I shared. The point, I don't even think I got to the point, was that I think it took me longer to like edit the story. Not that it needed a lot of editing, but to like, you know,
write the headline.
Yeah. You got to get it ready to go. Then it took Doc to write it. It was just like,
crazy.
I think, you know, he had the uncanny ability to have the entire column start to finish in his mind.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of getting it out of his head and, you know, into his laptop. So, well, Doc, Paul Daugherty, if you're listening, if not, your ears are certainly burning. But good times with Doc, right?
Doc, I know what you meant all those years about banging your head against the wall of trying to find a new angle to write about the Bengals. I feel you.
Yeah, this season they really have not strayed from the woefully familiar plot of injuries and not meeting expectations. Although the expectations were super high this year, so they would have been hard to meet. But still, I don't think anyone expected.
I think they're always going to be super high as long as Joe Burrow is your quarterback.
But I don't think anybody expected the string of mishaps and injuries. And you know, there was that little bright spot, like Joe Flacco kind of having a career year at age 40, or at least a career game. But
hey, another thing I was positive about, like I thought that was a very forward thinking move to go get Joe Flacco.
But again, spending all the money on offense.
Yep.
Well, with that, should we wrap things up?
Let's do it.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of the Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today was the unflappable Sam Green.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer for new subscribers.
Thanks again, and see you next week.